Well, welcome back to Shattering Myths. I want to return to conclude our thoughts on the Devarim 13 test that Yahweh provided. And I received an email yesterday from one of my favorite people, someone who has helped me a great deal over the years. And she wrote the following. So while listening to yesterday's third hour, the conversation between Kirk and you regarding Hasatan, Satan, the adversary, brought this thought. You've most likely had it. And I may have made some of these connections, but not as clearly as she states here in this email. Yahweh, desiring a loving relationship with humankind, chose to reveal his Torah through mankind. And through humans who are humble, as is Yahweh's nature, and who have chosen to rely on him and trust him. And he did so to achieve his desired results. Yahweh's humble. God is actually the kind of individual, loving relationships, who prefers relational reliance. And so he chose to achieve his desired result through like-minded people, people who were far more concerned about the family than they are with themselves, people who were far more concerned about the relationship than they were about their own personal achievements. Now, the adversary, desiring to lord over humankind and to rise above Yahweh, especially by thwarting Yahweh's desires, chose to twist and distort Yah's Torah by choosing arrogant, self-serving, as is Satan's nature, mankind to deceive by influencing, using their ability to conceive religions, political institutions, militaries, erroneous economic schemes, all in an effort to shatter Yah's desires. In fact, she even mentions the fact that since Hasatan isn't creative, the adversary isn't creative. And the reason the adversary is not creative is creativity requires free will. Very difficult to create without free will. And in fact, creation was the foremost expression of Yahweh's free will. Our choice to unify ourselves and join the Creator's family is the highest calling and expression of our free will. The Malach are in a command and control regime. That's why Yahweh refers to them using the Hebrew word Shabbat, which actually speaks of military type control. In the military, people don't have free will. You don't have free will in the military. You have to follow orders. You're told what to do. You do what you're told. You go where you're told. You do it when you're told. You don't have any influence over how your time is spent. You don't have any influence on where you live. You don't have any influence on what you do. You're told. You're ordered. That's the nature of the Malach. They're told to follow, and they're given orders, and they carry out those orders. It's not a matter of being browbeaten. They were created beings specifically to do as Yahweh wanted done. You know, God doesn't want to have to engage in human events, but yet there are things that he has to do to protect those he loves. And the mechanism for doing so is the Malach, his messengers. But he orders them. He says, this is what I want you to do. Do this. Do this then, there, and with these individuals. So Malach don't have free will. Therefore, they can't be creative. So there's two thoughts here that are being conveyed in this email. One is that you can tell the inspiration from the attitude and the approach of the messenger. If they are like Muhammad and egotistical and ruthless and disingenuous and immoral, if they are like Paul and are ruthless by his own admission, irrational by his own admission, dishonest by his own proclamation, and exceedingly arrogant by his own admission. If they have those characteristics which are shared by Satan, they're Satan's messengers. Yahweh's messengers do not have any of those traits. Now, I want to be clear here that I am not speaking for Yahweh. I am simply sharing what Yahweh shared with all of us. Well, we have a first person relationship as it relates to conveying his testimony. I'm doing so in third person. Yahweh shared it with Moshe in this case. I'm now sharing it with you. But still, I'm playing a role as a part of the message, as a messenger of the message that has been conveyed. And you'll note that, like when I was talking with IQ this earlier today about, well, I don't care what happens to fundamentalist Muslims, as they are a cancer, a blight on this earth. I do care what is perpetrated in my name. And so I care deeply about the United States perpetrating militant acts and engaging in kidnapping and terror. And I care when the United States engages in torture. We ought not do these things. And I recognize that bullets and bombs and violence and militarism and force will never prevail in thwarting Islamic terrorism. I'm opposed to the use of violence. You know, that's the nature of someone who speaks Yahweh's message. While we do not care what happens to those that are inflicted with the deadly pathogens of religion and politics, militarism, we don't care. We don't want harm to come to them in our name. What they do to themselves is up to them. Not going to engage trying to protect one of them from another one of them. But we're not violent. Paul was violent. Muhammad was ruthless. And we're not egotistical. Paul was egotistical beyond imagination. Because they mirror the attitude of Satan. But she's going that one step further to say that since Satan doesn't have creativity to create new religions, Satan has to rely on the creativity of those he possesses, Muhammad and Paul, for example, Rabbi Akiva, another great example. And it's a way that a uncreative individual can create something. Now, that being the case, I'm here to tell you that religion really hasn't changed much since Babylon. Christianity has so much in common with the Babylonian religion, as does Islam. This integration of religion and politics and militarism and patriotism and the like that was practiced in Babylon is the same that was practiced in Greece, the same that was practiced in Rome. It is very, very common and doesn't require a lot of creativity. It's actually more counterfeiting than anything else. And counterfeiting and whitewashing are not forms of creativity. And those are the primary ploys of religion. Christianity is a whitewash and counterfeit of the truth. You're not being creative when you counterfeit. You're not being creative when you whitewash. But nonetheless, there are some creative twists in Christianity. You know, the incorporation of Gnosticism, this fight between that the stuff substance of the flesh versus the spirit. That's Gnosticism. That's a creative touch brought in by Paul. bringing in the Gospels of grace. That was something that Paul conceived, and he did so to appeal to the Roman and Greeks who just loved the graces. So there are some creative twists in these religions. You know, Muhammad's Islam is nothing but regurgitated paganism. It's the same paganism that was became the basis of religion of his forefathers. He just gave it a new name to an old religion. Very, very, very little creativity in Islam. But nonetheless, that's a interesting insight. And we ought never lose sight of the fact that if somebody is egotistical, Barack Hussein Obama, for example, John Brenner, he's talking about defending the CIA and its torturous schemes. That as people become egotistical, as they run for public office, as they aspire to put on the uniform that says that they are a senior officer in the military and want to be saluted, when they're popes and want people to bow down to them, when people establish themselves as worthy, they're not in a position to speak for God. God never uses such people, ever. And so we can distinguish who's speaking for him and who's not. All of those Protestant pastors who have their mega churches and have built literally edifices to their ability to charm their audience, all of them fail in this regard. Now, Yahweh's concluding comments on the in the 13th chapter of Devarim, Deuteronomy, tells us what to do when we find somebody who is egotistical, somebody who is speaking things that are inconsistent with what he has said, people whose testimony is in conflict with his teaching. He says, do not serve with that individual. Don't engage with them. Do not cling to them. Instead, it is to Yahweh that we should engage, cling, and serve. God says, so therefore, that prophet or interpreter of revelations is deadly. Now, that's important because Yahweh is consistent. When he speaks of Paul, calling him out by name, calling out by the time that he lived, telling us when he would arise on the scene, telling us what attitude he would have in terms of his ego, what audience he would address, which is Gentiles, telling us what his primary issue would be, which is circumcision, telling us the tactic he would use, which is circular reasoning, and then called him out by name, calling him Shaul, which is his actual given name. Yahweh said that Shaul is the plague of death. Here in the Torah, he is telling you that a prophet that does the things that Paul has done is deadly. Yahweh is being consistent. You need to make these connections if you want to know him, if you want to understand what he's offering. For indeed, he has spoken rebellious renunciations. You know, Paul renounced the Torah. From God's point of view, that is a revolt, disassociating all who listen to him from him. It causes those who believe him to turn aside from the guidance that he has provided, to withdraw from him, to be removed from his family. And that this rebellious renunciation is against Yahweh, our God, the very God who led us out of the realm of the crucibles of Egypt. Now, the reason that he says this here, that Yahweh is the one who led us, who descended to serve by extending himself to lead us from the realm of the crucible of Egypt, is that the very tactic that Paul will use, and reason that Paul is important, no one in all of human history has deceived more people regarding God than Paul. Paul claimed to speak in the name of this God. Paul claimed to be inspired every word by this God. Paul led more people astray by making those claims than anyone in human history. There's no one as deadly as Paul. Single most deadly individual in human history. And what the reason that Yahweh is using this example is that Paul accused Yahweh of enslaving people with his Torah. He said that it was of the flesh and that it enslaved. And Yahweh is saying, I beg to differ. My children, you, were slaves in Egypt. You had been slaves in Egypt for 400 years. I freed you from slavery. Rather than being, as Paul claims, the God of the Torah who enslaves, Yahweh says, if you read the Torah, you'll find that I am the God who liberates you from slavery. His position here is the antithesis of the position held by the founder of the world's most popular religion. It's God versus Paul. Or I should say, Yahweh versus Paul, God versus religion. Pick your side. Pick your side. Go ahead. You got free will? But know that if you pick the side of religion, you are in opposition to God. You are rebellious. You are renouncing what he said. You are disassociated from him. You are all things that Korach conveys, including removed from his presence. He also says, and the one who redeemed you from the house of bondage and slavery, just in case you weren't thoughtful enough to ascertain what Egypt represents. And Egypt isn't written as Egypt. That's the Greek name. Egypt in the Torah, in Hebrew, is Mitzrayim. It is from Mitzrah. The plural of Mitzrah is Mitzrayim. Mitzrah is a crucible. It's a place where a means to test, to evaluate. And this would be crucibles. So what was the crucible? What was the test in Egypt? Human oppression. How? Well, through religion. Pharaoh claimed to be God and that he could impose his divine will. There was no difference in Egypt between the religion of Egypt and the politics of Egypt. And the economics of the religion and politics of Egypt enslaved the children of Israel. And it was the military that enforced the edicts of the religious and political establishment. That's why it's plural, Mitzrayim. So just in case you didn't realize that the crucibles, Mitzrayim, of human oppression and divine judgment, and human oppression coming in the forms of religious oppression, political oppression, military oppression, and economic oppression, then, and you didn't figure that, okay, Yahweh led the children of Israel away from 400 years of enduring that freed them from it. If you couldn't figure that out, this is important because the most deadly prophet of all of human history, it's not Muhammad, it's Paul, would assail the Torah and what Yahweh did in the Torah as enslaving. So God is saying, who redeemed you? Now that's what's interesting here. This is pada, redeemed. Because Paul will write in Galatians that the Torah cannot save. And yet Yahweh said, I redeemed you. It's not just that I led you away from slavery. I redeemed you from those crucibles, the crucible of divine judgment, the crucible of human oppression. I redeemed you. I ransomed you from those things. Wow. The antithesis of Pauline doctrine. And from the house of slavery. He is the God of liberation. The Torah liberates, it doesn't enslave. This is the antithesis of Pauline doctrine. It is the antithesis of the religion of Christianity. And since Christians walk around with their holy Bibles, saying this is the inerrant word of God, and you've got in the Torah, here in the fifth book of the Torah, in that same Bible, this statement which says that Yahweh is the one who leads us from the crucibles and the one who ransomed us from slavery. And you've got Paul's 13 letters in the Christian New Testament that say exactly the opposite. You've got a conflict here that proves that one or both are lying. It's possible that Yahweh is a liar and that the Exodus did not occur. Now, there's absolute proof that it did. Absolute, unequivocal proof that it did. In Egypt, in the Sinai, in the Red Sea, and in Saudi Arabia. And then again, as the children of Israel come into the promised land of Israel. Absolute, unequivocal proof that it occurred. So, Yahweh is clearly not lying. But that would have been a possibility without the influence of history. So both could have been lying, but Yahweh is not. So that means that since their statements are the antithesis of each other, the absolute opposite of each other, there is no other informed or rational possibility other than Paul lied. Paul lied. He is the very person with rebellious renunciations. He is the plague of death. He is the one who spoke against Yahweh. God says of him, of Paul, the founder of the Christian religion, author of half of the Christian New Testament, his desire is to seduce and scatter you. His purpose is to entice and compel you to be drawn away and to be thrust aside from the way which beneficially Yahweh your God described, providing you with a complete set of directions. Oh my God! How clear can God make it? How more anti-Christian can you be? You know, I have a lot of people that don't like the fact that I'm so opposed to the religion of Christianity, that I am so demonstrably in opposition to Paul. You can't be any more in opposition to Paul than this. There's only one person that God's talking about here. It's the very person he names in Habakkuk is the plague of death. That's why he started with ego and establishing himself. That's why he talks about rebellious renunciations, particularly against Yahweh's role as our liberator, calling him an enslaver, against Yahweh's inability to redeem when, in fact, that's what he did for us. And he says of this man, of Paul, of the founder of the Christian religion, of author of half of the Christian New Testament, that his desire is to seduce and to scatter you. It's true. Paul knew what he was doing. His desire was to seduce and to scatter, to entice, to compel, to draw away and to thrust aside. From what? The way. Which beneficially Yahweh your God described, providing you with a complete set of directions. This began by saying that every word of the Torah served as directions. Every word. Don't take anything away from it. Don't add anything to it. God says here, I provided you with a complete set of directions. This began by saying every word of this should serve as directions. Observe it. Closely examine and carefully consider it. Don't add anything. Take anything. I mean, Paul took everything away from the Torah, and he added his own New Testament. There is no getting around, folks. You could spend an eternity searching the world for another candidate, and you won't find one. It's Paul. This is all about Christianity. And let's get right to the specifics. Not only did God describe his Torah as the source of direction and guidance, that we were to consider every word, closely examining and carefully considering it, so that we would know how to engage in a relationship with him. Not only did he begin that way, he has just concluded telling us where he engaged, how he engaged, to lead us to freedom. Freedom from religious oppression and political oppression and military oppression and economic oppression. And what path he himself engaged in to redeem us. Folks, what is the context of the first Passover? What is the context of the first celebration of unyeasted bread of matzah? What is the context of the first celebration of Hakodim? What is the context of... This is very Exodus. It's Yahweh engaging to lead us away from the crucibles of Egypt. The first Passover began this journey with God away from religion and politics. That was the first step, the first door away from these things into his home, into his land. The doorway which leads away from these things is Passover. That is the complete set of directions are in this very statement that preceded this. That's why context is so important. A complete set of directions began with the doorway labeled Passover. Following that, the fungus of yeast was removed from the bread, demonstrating that sin would be removed from our souls. All of the stigma of the religious and political and military and economic corruption of Egypt and its subsequent enslavement of people, their subjugation, all of that horror, all of that malignancy, all of that poison and disease was being removed. Matzah, unyeasted bread. Why? So that we could become his family. So we could be adopted into the covenant family as his children. That's why they're the children of Yisrael, walking with their father, ultimately into the promised land. And what did he do along the way? He led them. He protected them. He saw to it that they were clothed and that they were fed and that mostly they were nourished with his testimony. And then when they reached Mount Horeb, where Yahweh himself blazed in glory at the top of that mountain, spoke to them directly, provided water from that mountain to quench their thirst, that on the top of that mountain, he ate and drank and conversed with Moshe and seven others, providing them with the Torah as our confirmation of who Yahweh is and what he's offering, providing all of humankind with a complete set of directions, Shawah. This began with Shawah. It is concluding with Shawah. If you want to know how to go from the blight of religion and politics and militarism and patriotism and economic schemes to Yahweh's home, you'll find it in these Sawa instructions and directions. closely examine and carefully consider them. Shamar. If you want to discern and always be in a position to discern who is misleading you, and closely examine and carefully consider the instructions that Yahweh has provided in His Torah, and you'll recognize those who are contradicting Him, like Paul, and you won't be fooled by them anymore. That is the message here. It will shape your understanding of the world. It will shape and guide your knowledge of God. It will direct you into His home. That's why all of this has been provided for us. And then God said to this, He said, of His participation, where He walked the walk and led us away from the religion and politics of Egypt, and the one who personally redeemed us so we would be liberated and ransomed from slavery. He said, of these complete set of instructions, walk in them. Walk to God along this path. Yahweh in His Torah, when He's speaking of His covenant, in the first book of the Torah, encourages us to walk to Him and become perfect. Uses the same verb, halak, that is used here. He's speaking of that Yahweh has provided us with a complete set of directions for us to walk in. And He preceded that by saying that He led us to freedom from being enslaved. He led us away from the crucibles of human oppression, religion and politics, that He engaged to lead us away from these things. And He's saying it in context with taking the children of Israel who had been slaves to the religious and military and political and economic schemes of the Egyptians for 400 years, and that He personally engaged to lead them via Passover, unyeasted bread, firstborn children, and the promise of the Sabbath, Pesach, Matzah, Bukkudim, and Shavuah, to the promised land, taking care of them all the way as a father to his children. And He says, walk in those directions, just as the children of Israel walked along that path. Just as He tells Abraham to walk to Him and become perfect. Do you see the connection? Are you making the connection? The way we walk to Yahweh and become perfect, which is the third requirement of the covenant, is along this very path that God has provided a complete set of instructions. There's only one path that God has provided a complete set of instructions. It's the path that is enumerated over 7 days, that is 6 steps to the destination, the seventh, which is camping out with God. From those first four that we've talked about, you have Teruah. And on Teruah, we share what we have learned. We are designated as His children to do as we're doing on this program, to declare His testimony, to be troubadours, to blow the trumpet, particularly the ram's horn, the shofar, encouraging people to be part of that day of reconciliations so that our relationship is reconciled with Yahweh, the beneficiaries of those first four Moed Mikre have their relationship reconciled, enabling us to camp out with Yahweh, Sukkah. That's the path. It's the only path. It's the path that Yahweh has personally engaged in preparing. That's the path that He Himself walked. Those are the dates that Yahusha fulfilled and honored and observed. Follow Him. Walk along this same path. It will lead to freedom. It will lead to redemption. that will lead to Yahweh. It is the purpose of the Torah is to guide us along this path. It doesn't say paths. This path. It doesn't say to Jesus Christ. It says to Yahweh. It doesn't say law. It says instruction. It doesn't say slavery. It says liberation. All of it has been delineated here and affirmed so that we would observe it, to closely examine and carefully consider these things so that we can make these connections, so that we can come to know this information directly from the Creator God of the universe. And then once we get to know Him, to fall in love with Him. And if you don't love Him, at least respect Him. Don't disregard Him by slathering Him with a phony name, with ascribing attributes to Him that make Him meaningless. Come to know Him as He really is. Come to approach Him along the path and the means that He has provided. Come to appreciate the fact that He has provided us with a complete set of instructions. Study them. Think about them. Come to know Him based upon them. Act upon them. Engage in this covenant. It's all laid out for you. Yahweh has invited you into His home. Answer His invitation. Now you know where to find it. I look forward to being with you this evening on Yada Yah Radio, and then again next week. May Yah bless.